edition to Castle Ravenloft. This is The Tome, and I, as always, am Jeff Greiner. The Tome is a D&D game book review podcast focused on official content. In this episode, I will explore the latest official journey into that classic castle in the land of Barovia called Ravenloft. As always, I encourage all listeners to help out the show however you can. You can help out by taking some time to write an iTunes review, voting on Podcast Alley, or digging the show at dig.com. You can also help out the show with your participation. Email me guest reviews, discussion on the nonsense that I spout, additions to be shared about any upcoming books that I will review, feedback to help me improve the show, or suggestions on what I should be looking at. You can reach me by emailing thetomeshow@gmail.com or even IMing me with the screen name The Tome Show, all one word, on AIM, Yahoo, Google Talk, or thetomeshow@gmail.com on MSN. Upcoming episodes will include discussions on the latest Dragon magazine, Fiendish Codex 2, Dragons of Faerun, with a mini-review of the Year of Rogue Dragons novel series, and Dragonmarked. Also expect a mini-review of the Legend of Drizzt graphic novels, tagged on to one of those upcoming shows. Now, let's look at reader email. There's not a lot this time around, largely because it's only been, a week or so since I put out the last episode, and with the holidays going on at the same time, I imagine people are still catching up. But we do have one here from Neil Smark. He says, "Hi, I'm a gamer coming back from a 20-year absence, and I'm finding your podcast great to catch up on what's happening in the hobby. I would like to say the issue of whether or not you should do Dragon Magazine reviews is silly. It's not like every second podcast is doing it, so you're providing something that's not being done. So keep doing it until you find you don't want to do it anymore. If I could mention another thing, could you flesh out some of the things you say? For example, you mentioned that we should all be listening and taking notice of Steve Colbert. Being new again to the scene, I'd like to know who he is and why I should. I would say there are other new-to-the-hobby players that would as well. You get quite a few emails from new players asking for information, so your show sounds like it is a starting point for many new players. Please give us more information on the small details. Thanks for listening, and keep up the good work. Regards, Neil Smark." Okay, well, great. Thanks for the email, Neil. And welcome back to the hobby. I'm glad you're getting back into Dungeons & Dragons. That's great. So far, I'm hearing a lot of positive feedback on the Dragon Magazine reviews, and very little negative. And so for the time being, I'm just going to keep doing them. If they're not your thing, that's cool. You don't have to listen to them. I won't be hurt. And I'm glad that you've noticed that I'm not necessarily doing the same thing that every second podcast is doing. In fact, that's why I started the show. I was looking for a long time, I was looking for podcasts that were doing reviews of D&D books. D&D is almost exclusively the only role-playing game I play anymore. And so I was looking, and there's a ton of material on it, so I was looking for somebody who was doing reviews so I could figure out if stuff is any good or not before I go out and spend the money on it. And after a long time looking, I found nothing. Nobody was doing it, which was why I said, you know what, fine. If nobody's doing it, I'll do it and see if anybody else is looking for this kind of thing too. So that's sort of where the show came from. So as long as it is something unique, and I'm doing it as well as anybody else might be doing it, I'll keep doing the show as I've been doing it, or until you guys tell me it needs to change. As far as fleshing things out, I apologize for not explaining things as well as maybe I could or should. I've been playing for a long time now. I've been playing, in fact, almost as long as you've been away on an absence from the game. Almost 20 years now I've been playing D&D. And so sometimes I forget what may not be innate knowledge for some people is just natural for me to understand and to know. So anytime I don't explain something well enough, or I leave some, or I make a comment and it didn't make any sense, please let me know. Send me the emails. I'm sure you're not the only one wondering about it. Anybody who out there has a question or something isn't clear, let me know, and I'll clear it right up in the next episode. As far as Stephen Colbert, he actually, for the most part, has nothing to do with D&D and with role-playing. He's a TV personality. He has a show called The Colbert Report on Comedy Central, which is, by and large, hilarious. He used to be on The Daily Show, and then this is sort of a spin-off from The Daily Show. And while he was doing interviews with on some other talk shows, he mentioned role-playing. He mentioned Dungeons & Dragons and an old character he used to have and that kind of stuff. And so that sort of spawned the article that was in that Dragon that I was talking about when I brought him up, where there's the D&D guy who helps run a con, who's trying to get Stephen Colbert to come to that con. And so it's sort of just a running joke. And I'm sorry I didn't explain it better when it came up in that episode. Thanks again for the email, though, Neil. I appreciate it, and I hope to hear from you more in the future. Now, let's take a look at Expedition to Castle Ravenloft. Expedition to Castle Ravenloft by Bruce Cordell and James Wyatt. Not the least glimmer of light escaped the castle's tall, black windows. Its broken battlements sketched a jagged line across the darkened sky. Castle Ravenloft brooded over a bleak, mist-shrouded valley. Constructed on the sheer side of a 1,000-foot cliff, the terrible fortress was occupied by something ancient and evil. A blot of night detached from the shadowed walls of the castle and moved out into a narrow balcony. Lightning revealed the sneering countenance of Count Strahd von Zarovich. His eyes, burning with a never-satisfied hunger, took in the drizzling twilight, the looming peaks, and the few sad lights in the village below. He clutched one hand to his chest and muttered, as if making a promise or perhaps delivering a curse, a single name, Irina. Strahd grimaced, and his sharp canine teeth promised mayhem. A bitter wind spun dead leaves about him, billowing his velvet-lined cape. Another fit of lightning burst from the storm's underbelly, casting stark light across Strahd's face. The angular muscles of his visage and the taut lines of his hands revealed a man accustomed to exercising complete authority. In that face, no pity lived. But perhaps hints of a growing madness? His eyes narrowed as he spied the newcomers. A group traveled down Old Svalich Road toward the village. His grimace transformed into a hideous smile. He knew they were coming, knew why they came, and relished what would be their ultimate fate. No plan could be called good unless blood was spilled during its execution. All the pawns were finally assembled. All the pieces prepared for so long were in place and waiting to play their parts. Precious few weapons could permanently harm him any more. Soon enough, Strahd would personally attend the newcomers. Just a warning, this is a review of an adventure, and thus it will contain spoilers. I won't be giving away all of Strahd's secrets, but I will go into some detail as to the finer points of the story, so consider yourself warned. Besides the introduction you just heard, you need to know one other thing from the introduction of this book. This version of Ravenloft is based on the original module by Tracy and Laura Hickman. It is not based on the campaign setting of the same name, Ravenloft. Some quick history for those of you who haven't kept up on the lore of Ravenloft. First, there was a module, a simple little horror adventure that could be placed in any world at any time and easily set in for playing. Later, the folks at TSR, the company that used to own D&D, said, hey, let's take some elements from this great and popular module and make a whole horror setting based on this. And thus the setting of Ravenloft was born, that then later grew to contain other such realms like Sithicus and that held Lord Soth that I talked about on the last episode that came up in that Dragon Magazine issue. When they relaunched the setting, or when they created this new setting, They also did a rewrite of the original module to help you place it in the new setting. I've played both the original and the remake of the module, and they're both very good books. But the important bit to take from this is that this adventure does not take place on the Demiplane of Dread, which was the inescapable setting that was called Ravenloft. That setting is no longer officially supported by the company ever since 3rd edition came out, although it has continued its life through fans and through a third-party company, White Wolf, which picked up the rights to continue publishing Ravenloft material. You can check that out at www.white-wolf.com. Chapter 1. Adventures in Ravenloft. This chapter sort of sets out what it takes to run the adventure, what it's all about, how some of the unique features work, and that sort of thing. It tells you how to prepare for the game, it explains the format, and the format is fairly unique. Each chapter after this one contains locations and encounters in different areas of the adventure. Chapter 2 is all about the village of Barovia, Chapter 3 is all about the surrounding wilderness, and Chapter 4 is all about Castle Ravenloft. Plus, there's an extensive appendix. But what is truly unique about the format is the tactical encounters. At the end of each chapter, they throw in a tactical encounter section. This is designed to make the job of the DM as easy as possible when it comes to running combats. Any rules you might need to know, they throw in there. Any stats you need are there. Maps for each encounter, including starting locations for each creature in the combat. And it also includes a read-aloud description of key events and tactics for each creature. The DM, in many cases, just needs to follow the simple steps provided, without a lot of looking other things up and additional rules up in other books. My only criticism of the tactical encounter format, which otherwise is awesome, is the maps. Do the maps look bad? No, the maps are absolutely beautiful, especially the full-color maps. There are two cartographers that worked on this project, and thus two different style of maps that you see, and one of them is just absolutely stunning, and the other one is good too. They're just beautiful, beautiful maps. They're also, however, completely useless for anybody except the DM. They aren't large enough to use as they are, and you couldn't do that anyway because it already marks the locations of all the creatures, which in some cases start out hidden, or in other cases may not even actually be in that encounter, depending on what happens with the fortunes of Ravenloft, which I'll talk more about later. Or DM preferences could change some things too. They were cool enough when they released the book to also put all the maps online through Wizards.com's website, for people to download and use as they wanted, but even those maps are all also marked, and so would require pretty significant work from a DM to make them usable. So I think most DMs are going to end up redrawing the maps on a mat or whatever they happen to use all over again, and so I feel bad that the cartographers seemed to have spent all kinds of work putting this thing together and creating these beautiful, beautiful maps that the players will never get to see. The players are just going to be stuck with whatever things the DM happens to scrawl onto a mat. And I sort of feel bad for that situation. Now, luckily for you, I have a special gift for my listeners. I've recreated the maps for the second and third chapters without the creatures marked in an electronic format, and will be making them available through the website in PDF format. And you can print them off as large as you like and use them however you want. Now, bear in mind, I am not an artist, and I do not have expensive graphic design software. So these are not nearly as pretty as what you'll see in the book. But they should be functional, almost perfectly accurate, and best of all, for you, free and easy. Remember, the site is http://thetome.podbean.com. And I will have that up for you soon, my holiday gift for you. This chapter also provides a full range of statistics for Strahd, a CR15 creature, vampire, who's also the master and main villain of the story. And when characters are starting at 6th level for this adventure, a CR15 creature seems like a pretty hefty challenge, so you better pay close attention when people give you advice on how to fight this guy. You also get information on his servants, be they bats, vermin, wolves, a group of people, or full-blown NPCs who might be used to attack or spy on the PCs and report back to Strahd and tell him what's going on so nothing gets past this guy. It also lists Strahd's possible goals. There is one primary goal tied to one NPC and the death of his love so long ago. But they also provide secondary goals. These can be determined randomly, or they can be picked by the DM to suit that DM's style. They include getting rid of or converting rivals, going insane, or creating new types of undead to help him expand his influence. Next, you get suggestions on how to set up the adventure. If you want to do it as a full-blown mini-campaign, a long adventure, a short adventure, or even adapt it to be a one-night game, they go step-by-step on which parts to include and which parts to cut out in order to make that happen. Then, you also get adventure hooks, ideas on how to help bring PCs into the game, including three specifically designed to fit Eberron, the Forgotten Realms, and even D20 Modern, which would be an interesting choice. Lastly, you get information about how to get the PCs into the game. They do this via a letter from the burgomaster of the village, and what the PCs might encounter as they approach the realm for the first time. Chapter 2, Village of Barovia. This chapter opens with information about a zombie incursion into the village of Barovia and the encounters the players face as they work their way into town, meet some possibly important NPCs, and eventually figuring out the cause of the undead rampage and defeating the corruption that caused it at the village church and finding some clues as to what Strahd's story is all about. When you find the source of the corruption, part of a book, and a key element to the story and motivations of the long-dead Count Strahd von Zarovich, the game becomes much less linear, allowing players to go where they wish and do what they wish in the order that they want to do it in. Also in this chapter, the players will learn some key concepts to help them defeat Strahd. Mostly, they'll pick up some key words and rumors about what is going on in the castle, what has been happening in town, and what is going on in the wilderness that gives the Count his stronger-than-usual ability. The things the players might start to learn about here include the holy symbol of Ravenkind, the Sun Sword, the original powerful artifact, and three wilderness fanes, which give Strahd extra power, as well as the Tome of Strahd, an item that sort of helps explain what this whole adventure is all about. It's a fairly short chapter, which is fine because I've already started going too long. But it introduces you to the locations and people that will end up acting as your player's supply station, home base, resting place, and possibly key elements of the overall adventure. But there's not too much more to add here without just completely spoiling the adventure. When the village has been explored and the zombies defeated, the PCs are highly encouraged to go meet Madame Ava, as she is a seer, able to help people see and achieve their destinies. Madame Ava, you will see in the next chapter, provides a key element to the game, but they do make suggestions on how to handle it if players opt to ignore the Barovian's advice. Chapter 3, The Lands of Barovia. This is where the players start actively working to defeat Strahd. First, you get some information about three hags. Each, in turn, is defending one of the three wilderness fanes, and each of which have a complex relationship with each other, Strahd, and the village. Next, you learn about the mists. Barovia is surrounded and infused with perpetual mists, which make it nearly impossible to escape as Strahd controls them, and people are often forced back into the realm, or out of it, as Strahd desires. This helps push the theme of horror, since the PCs are now trapped in this horrible place. The mists aren't as powerful as they were in the Ravenloft campaign setting, but it should be enough to keep cowardly PCs from getting away. You get some descriptions of possible wilderness locations and encounters, including the three fanes, and what you might run into while getting to them, or to the castle. There are also a ton of tactical locations listed for this chapter to help DMs run encounters and side adventures from this part of Barovia. One of the key locations provided is the Seer Pool, which is where a group called the Vistani make camp. These are clearly an imitation of the gypsies of the original Dracula stories. They sort of work for Strahd, they sort of work with the village, but they mostly seem to work for themselves. But they do get more freedom and protection than most people in Barovia. Most importantly, this is where Madame Ava is located. Madame Ava is the one who will help us determine so much of what happens in this adventure. And she is the reason that people can replay this adventure again and again, and things change each time. Madame Ava reads the cards and tells us about the fortunes of Ravenloft. In order to simulate the fortunes of Ravenloft card reading, you are actually given specific instructions on how to actually do a card reading using either regular playing cards, tarot cards, or three dragon ante cards. Three dragon ante is a fantasy-based card game created by Wizards of the Coast. The fortunes of Ravenloft determine locations of important items and people, including Strahd, the Sun Sword, the holy symbol of Ravenkind. It also determines where you need to go and what you need to do to activate the greater powers of the Sun Sword and the holy symbol, or how you can wrest power from the Wilderness Fanes away from Strahd. While someone who has played this adventure before will be familiar with some of the locations and events, they likely will not experience all that this adventure has to offer, and that's where replaying with the randomness of the fortunes of Ravenloft come into play, because every time you play it, items, rituals, events could play out differently depending on what happens with this random card reading. Some of these things are really cool that is determined. Some of these make parts of the game easier, and some of them make it much harder. For example, it's possible to find key items like the sword or the holy symbol in very simple locations and unguarded, like in a store in town or in the church that you've likely already cleared out. But to activate these things, sometimes you have to do things like stand vigil overnight inside the castle. Not only must you go to the right spot in the castle after puzzling out where that might be, but then you have to protect yourself with Strahd there, obviously trying to hurt you and stop you, and his minions at his side, and you haven't probably even eliminated all of his powers, and you're certainly not at your full power until you finish that ritual. So it can make things rather dangerous. Chapter 4, Castle Ravenloft. You are first given some general information about the way things are built and the way they work in the castle. Stats on the walls and the doors in case someone decides to break through. It also provides special rules about light sources and how well they work in the castle, since there's a sort of mystical gloom that fills the place, and so your light sources will not be as revealing as you might want them to be. Then it launches right into a room-by-room description of the castle, broken down by floors. It starts on the outside of the castle and then goes into the main floor, complete with dining room, a chapel, various other creepy sort of locations. The place where you have to be a bit more careful as a DM is when going up and down several sets of spiral stairs that all sort of seem to look alike. Make sure you get the right one when you switch maps, or things will get messed up really fast. You then work your way up through bedrooms and treasuries, and then up into the towers, wherein lies the Dayheart, a special artifact that helps give Strahd even more special abilities. An allied demon and a coven of warlocks are up in the towers. Going down from the main floor, you get a series of rooms like kitchens and a kitchen, offices, that sort of thing. And when you finally make it down one level further, you start getting into very cool and interesting rooms, such as the Drowned Torture Chambers, the Workshop of a Necromancer, and a vast array of catacombs full of tons of crypts, each of which has a full description. One thing I notice when you get into the actual castle is there is a lot of interaction with the planes and outsiders from the planes, which seems unusual for a game focused on undead and horror with undead. I'm not sure yet if I like it as a unique twist or if I don't like it as taking some of the classic undead horror out of the story. I'll have to play through the game a few times before I really make a decision as to whether or not I like that. And it seems like there's only a handful of instances, you might be able to pull out those outsiders and replace them with something else that fits the theme better. I'm not sure. I also noticed that there's an interesting allusion to an ancient primal evil that is under the castle and has been there for ages before Barovia was ever even born. It seems there is or should be a larger story to this, at least larger than what they provide, and I'd like to know just a little bit more about it. It could be the source of a great follow-up adventure for a DM who finishes up this book and wants to continue adventuring in Barovia. But it would be nice to just get a tad more information. I don't want a ton. I don't want a whole separate second adventure book dealing with it, but just a tad more information to help spur my creativity on so that I could come up with something with that on my own. This castle is complex and it is large, which is part of what makes it cool, and it's also what makes it so that the DM needs to be very sure to watch very carefully and make sure they're getting everything just right, or you could risk throwing some serious kinks into the game. There's a huge section in this chapter on tactical encounters, generally involving multiple rooms, which I like. If you are doing something in one room, they give you ideas on how that might affect things, people, and creatures in the room next door, and what they might do about it. There are even encounters for the same room multiple times, depending on where you're coming from, and a bit of what happened before. This section is gigantic. The appendix. The appendix of most books is largely not too horribly important, but maybe a couple of pages of interesting tidbits that just didn't seem to fit into a normal chapter. Not this time. The appendix is large and crucial to what you can do with this book. It is in the appendix that you get a few feats to help fight against negative levels. The Knight of the Raven prestige class is here, which is a divine casting knight with special abilities tied to a celestial raven companion. I particularly like that there are no penalties if the raven happens to die. If there were penalties, I know if I was the player, I would never use the raven in a fight for fear that it would die. Because there's no penalties, I might be interested in playing this and getting that raven in there and using those special abilities that I've gained. And if it dies, there's no penalty, and I just got to take a little more time and get a new raven, which is cool. There's the Lightbringer organization, a group that can be all over your game world, set to destroy undead. This comes complete with class substitution levels, where you can take out an ability that normally goes with a class to gain this new ability geared towards defeating undead. They have substitution levels for bards, a lot for clerics, paladins, and rogues. There are a handful of new alchemical items useful for fighting undead, a new spell that you might find use for, especially if you're the DM, and a bunch of new magic items that you might find over the course of the adventure. You'd be surprised on how often the book says that item X is detailed in this book, since it's new. There are surprisingly few items scattered throughout the adventure that aren't from this book. There are some, but not as many as you would think there were. They just provide a lot of new magic items and then integrate them into the adventure in one way, shape, or form. Of course, in this part, you also get details about the Sun Sword and the Holy Symbol of Ravenkind, and what happens when you awaken their other powerfuls via a bonding ritual. Lastly, you get various versions of a letter that the PCs might get from the Burgomaster at the start of the game to draw them into Barovia to begin with. Each one is different depending on what Strahd's secondary goal is going to be. All in all, this should be an extremely fun adventure that can last you for months or hours depending on how you want to play it. And that doesn't include if you choose to replay it again with a different experience altogether. It is a horror-filled game and an exciting adventure. I seldom buy or run adventures from any company, and I tend to prefer making my own. Likewise, you may have noticed from previous episodes that I tend to be a bit stingy when it comes to the value of books. I've never reviewed a book as being worth the cover price. That doesn't mean I don't love the books. They're wonderful. If I didn't love this hobby, if I didn't love these books, I wouldn't be spending the time doing this. I love the books. I just think prices tend to be a little high right now. All that said, this book has a cover price of $34.95, and I would value it at $30, which I think is the highest I've gone on a book that I've reviewed here. So, this is a good book. This is a good adventure. Everyone go and play Ravenloft. In fact, I would like to run a bit of an experiment here. If you are interested in playing the Expedition to Castle Ravenloft adventure as a play-by-email game, I will run it. If we can get four or more players willing to give it a shot, I will run it just for my listeners. If you have never been involved in a play-by-email game before, that's fine. I'll walk you through it and tell you know how it works. I've been doing it for many years now. If you are interested, just shoot me an email at thetomeshow@gmail.com and I will send you a link to the site that we will be using. I'll be interested to see how many of you are interested in playing a game with other listeners and seeing how successful the game full of relative strangers can be. Again, just shoot me an email saying you're interested and I'll send you the link. Well, that's Expedition to Castle Ravenloft. Coming up, I will be looking at Fiendish Codex 2, Dragons of Faerun with a mini review of the Year of Rogue Dragons novel series, Dragonmarked, and of course any new Dragon Magazine issues that come up between now and then. I'd love to hear what you think about this review, about the upcoming books to review, and general feedback for the show. Just email thetomeshow@gmail.com or visit the site at http://thetome.podbean.com. Lastly, if you like the show, you can help it to get noticed by writing iTunes reviews, voting on Podcast Alley, or digging on dig.com. And there are links to the Podcast Alley vote and dig.com site on the website. I greatly appreciate the time it takes to do these things, even if it is just clicking a link or two. Thanks for listening. This has been Episode 8, Expedition to Castle Ravenloft of... The Tome.